Well, thank you so much for being a part of our online service this morning. Thank you for making the time, taking the time to be a part of what we have going on here at South Fork. And even though we've got this virus that's running around, that's causing some havoc and concern, I'm thankful that we still have an opportunity in our individual lives, in our individual relationships, and even online for us to be able to study and encourage with one another and be together. This morning, I want us to continue on with our conversation about Judas, that Jesus was with Judas, and Judas was an individual who chose to walk away from Jesus. As you remember from our study last week, Judas was with Jesus in so many events, and as he's walking away, as he leaves that final supper, we see then Jesus share some very significant things about what his ministry's purpose and what his direction really is, words of encouragement and help that really would have meant a lot for Judas had he understood the full meaning of who Jesus was. This morning, we want to step back again and look at Judas for his relationship and what it really meant to be the one who betrayed the Messiah. As we see that picture of that Last Supper, Jesus indicates that one there is going to betray. And Judas asks, "Is it I?" Is it I is a very interesting question when we consider so many things about what we think we know about Judas, what we preconceive, what we already see because we know the end of the story. And when he says, "Is it I?" it puts a wonder in our minds of what is he really asking? See, the "Is it I?" means, is my focus really on God? Or is it on myself? "Is it I" is part of this self-debate that Judas was having because he wasn't, I think, really trying to do a deed that would end up killing Jesus. And as we see this story unfold in maybe a new light, I hope that it will challenge us to reconsider what our beliefs are as Christ's followers, not just participants, but truly Christ's followers. Open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 26 with me. Matthew chapter 26, verses 6 through 16. Matthew chapter 26, verse 6 through 16 says this: "While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. 'Why this waste?' they asked. 'This perfume could have been sold at a high price, and the money given to the poor.' Aware of this, Jesus said to them, 'Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her.' Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, 'What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you?' So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over." If you skip down in that chapter to verse 24 and 25, in the New King James Version, it reads, "The Son of Man indeed goes just as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." Then Jesus, who was betraying him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" He said to him, "You have said it." The story continues on a little bit more if you flip over to John chapter 13. I want to set the stage of what all this is looking like in these last few days of Jesus' life. John chapter 13, starting in verse 26. Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. And as soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. So Jesus told him, "What you are about to do, do quickly." But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the festival or to give something to the poor. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night. The idea of betrayal, of turning his back on Jesus, of us putting ourselves in Judas's shoes for a moment, is a very difficult challenge for us. And I want to tell a story that maybe will help us understand a little bit of the backdrop, and then I want us to dive into a little bit of Judas's history to understand more of what was going on in his mind. You see, in the many years ago, there was a general, a great general, that helped with the formation of the United States of America. He was well known and well appreciated for his valor and courage. Many times in battle, he would lead the charge. He would race against the enemy. He would put himself in harm's way. There's been a story told of his horse being shot out from under him. He was shot in the leg in two different battles, both times in the same leg. He was a great captain. He brought in a military naval position that stopped the British Navy from invading and fully destroying those young colonies. He is considered by most historians to be the general who helped lead the charge that brought a turn in those early wars, that tipped the scales for the young colonies and gave them a chance to succeed and to escape from the tyranny of England. But this general was difficult to work with. The young ones under him found him to be very abrasive and discouraging. He did not offer much encouragement or support in the work that they were a part of. His words were terse and difficult to follow. He expected high commitment. Those that were above him in command found him to be difficult as well, as he was arrogant, as he was belittling for their mistakes. He was obnoxious in the ways that he interacted with them above and those below. And so this general often found himself succeeding on the battlefield, but in the praise and the respect with the army, with the nation, he was lacking. And he was disappointed in that. We find towards the end, he was given an opportunity to change his fate, to get some recognition, to solidify his position as a leader and as a military person. And this general, as you know him, Benedict Arnold, is now known not for his valor, not for his wins, not for his naval prowess, but for being the traitor who took an opportunity to serve himself. You see, the question, "Is it I?" that Judas asks, is really a question that we all need to ask, looking at our own hearts and our own minds. That "Is it I?" is really a perspective. Is our perspective on God, or is it on ourselves? Second thing that I want us to point out for Judas is to understand the historical background of who he is and why he might have been motivated to make some of these, what we would consider almost inconceivable choices, to betray, to turn over, to sell out the Messiah. You see, Judas was one of the very unique individuals within the 12. Judas was a man that came from a province south of Jerusalem. While maybe most all of the other disciples came from a northern region around Galilee, Judas came from a place, a town called Kereth, in which now his name is Iscariot, is a derivative of. Kerith is a place that was known to have been overtaken by the Romans. They were under the Roman rule, and Jerusalem and above were under Herod's control. Herod was a Jew. You remember the story of Jesus when he's arrested. He goes before Pilate. Pilate is a Roman. He is one that is supposed to be a mediator between Rome and the Israel nation. Judas grows up in a place in which he feels the power of Rome. He feels the friction of what should be God's nation living under the tyranny of this foreign government. We also see Judas as one who the things that he loves, the things that he values, are actually devalued by Jesus. National pride, returning back to your own nation, your own sovereignty, is disregarded. The passage that we looked at in Matthew chapter 26, where Jesus is being anointed with perfume, Judas sees the great value in that perfume. He finds great resource or great joy in the resources of life. And those are the things that Jesus devalues. He disregards. The power, the restoring of the nation, we see that Jesus has no real interest in the things that the nation was looking for. When those three wise men came looking for the baby Jesus, they come to Herod and they ask for this new baby king, infant king. Herod responds in Matthew chapter 2, verse 2 through 4. They refer to this promised child as a king and as the Messiah. Herod knows that this is the prophecy, and this prophecy is significant. His instructors remind him again that this child, this king, will be born in Bethlehem in Matthew chapter 2, verses 5 through 6. And as these wise men set off, Herod puts in place a plan to protect his own reign. Pilate, when he's dealing with Jesus right before his crucifixion, Pilate asks Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" So there is this great thought within the nation of Israel, these Jewish people, that a king would rise up, that someone would deliver them from the oppression that they are in. And we see Judas coming up out of that area, living in that pressure, thinking that now is the time for someone to grab hold of the reins, to redirect the country, to give some military might, to bring some power in. And he has watched over and over again as Jesus has squandered the opportunities to rally his troops, to raise the resources, to invest in something that would really bring great change to Israel. Judas has two great reasons why he might want to do something. Maybe it wasn't to kill Jesus, but he wanted to strike a chord, I might suggest. Might want to just interject, to encourage, to inspire, to push Jesus in a direction in which he would take hold of the reins that Judas believed he was going to take hold of, to establish his kingdom here on earth, to overthrow all these others. And just as the sons, James, or brothers James and John, were calling for their position to sit on Jesus' right and left, as they were looking for this physical kingdom as well, maybe Judas, thinking about power and money, sees this as an opportunity to push Jesus a little bit further towards taking control and changing the world. Now, when we point our fingers so harshly at Judas, we need to understand that this group that Jesus had selected, these 12 that were following him, as we joked about last week in their qualifications for a CEO position, these 12 are really a band of misfits. This picture here that we're looking at is just really an Italian version of of Jesus and his disciples. This is not a great depiction of the reality of what they look like in their ethnic color and skin tone and lifestyle, but it gives us an understanding of the tribe that was around them, these 12. Think about it for just a moment. Alphaeus, he was a zealot. And that rolls off our tongue without much consideration, but that meant that he was a political, he was a social changer. He was pushing for something drastic to happen. He did not like the social status quo. He was ready for something new to come to Israel. Thomas, we often call Thomas the Doubter, his belief and understanding of who God is and the power of what he could do was difficult for him to fully comprehend and understand, even when they are telling him that Jesus had been raised from the dead. He wants to see, he wants to touch with his own hands. Matthew was a tax collector. That was almost the worst thing that you could be in the Jewish setting. One who would take funds from the Jewish people and give that over to the Romans, who would assist them in continuing to dominate and to rule over the Jews. James and John, they were angry, or they had anger and outbursts and attempt to capture those high seats in that position within Jesus's kingdom, so they thought. Peter is impetuous. He speaks often before he thinks through. He jumps into action before he has a game plan. And these and many others all were still looking for the earthly kingdom as Jesus ascends into heaven in Acts chapter 1, verse 6. They question, is now the right time for your earthly kingdom? Judas was a part of a band of misfits. And so there were all these weaknesses within these 12. And you see Judas asking, maybe with some questioning, with some curiosity, is it I? Another thing that we need to kind of ponder, we are quick to judge Judas because he goes off and he makes this deal with the high priest for 30 pieces of silver. We don't deal with gold and silver in our average exchanges of purchases or life. And so 30 pieces of silver sounds like a significant chunk of change in our world. And it's nothing to sneeze at as well. But when we think about really the historical value of what is going on, if we go back to John chapter 12 as Jesus is having this perfume poured on his head, as he is, as he says, being prepared for burial, this perfume that is being wasted, the disciples say, as Judas says, that money, that jar could have been sold, the money given to the poor. Judas realizes the value of that perfume. Scripture says it's worth almost a year's wages, which in today's terms would be somewhere near $40,000 to $50,000. We don't think about perfume in that cost. $40,000 to $50,000 for a jar of perfume. Wasted for one moment, one ceremonial wash, and Judas asks, couldn't we have sold that and given it to the poor? That's a plausible question. But then we think he sold Jesus to be crucified, to be killed for 30 pieces of silver. Historians tell us, actually they differ on their value, but some say that those 30 pieces of silver, depending on the size, the weight, the content of silver, it could be somewhere between $600 to about $10,000. In either case, the value of those silver coins is significantly less than the perfume. Judas was a part of Jesus' ministry, and he had his hands in the purse strings, in the purse bag of Jesus. How many of us are in places of position, of opportunity to control, to facilitate in an office or with other organizations in which we control a variety of different funds or different resources? And the idea of stealing $500 or $600 and giving up your career for such a small reward is insignificant. The opportunities that I have here at church to walk away with a computer or two and improve my life, but yet give up my career, is just foolish. Judas, we think, sold Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. What would you choose? The perfume or the 30 pieces of silver? The question really is, why did Judas do what he did? Was he thinking that maybe he was taking action? He was bringing some sort of motivation to Jesus so that the earthly kingdom would be captured, so that Jesus would really reign? Was he purposely planning something of a coup in which Jesus would be killed? Scripture tells us that Satan came into his heart. We see the outcomes, and the disciples were mortified at what transpired in the next few hours as Jesus is captured, is beaten, and is crucified. The world hangs in the balance of all of this, and then rejoices when Jesus is risen from the dead. Why would Judas do what he did? I don't like to think in these terms, but sometimes I wonder, if I were a part, would I have made an action? Would I have taken some steps like Judas to push Jesus to do something in which I thought was right in terms of my timing and my efforts? I wonder, as we, Christ followers, we sometimes maybe are following Christ, but pushing him to do what we want in our political agendas, in our social aspect, in our small organizations, our churches, in our homes. Are we really being Christ followers, or are we just around Christ, hoping to push him in the right direction to achieve our goals and our expectations? Judas was a man who definitely made a poor choice. And maybe in some way, with a little bit of grace, we might speculate on why he did what he did. And we don't really know the true intent of his heart and what the purpose was. But maybe his background, maybe his interest, maybe the social and political structures drive him to action that would bring, in his mind, Christ to the forefront of this picture. And when he sees Christ not living out that vision, when he sees Christ being taken into captivity, he realizes the full weight of his sin and mistakes. I wonder how many of us have lived a life in which we've tried to push Jesus. We've tried to make God do the things that we want to do, take action for us and our intentions. Our intentions were not to glorify God as the highest, but to achieve our own interests and desires. Take action, because your actions speak louder than words. And though we don't understand the full intent of Judas, we do see the conclusion of what he did. And it ended with the Son of God, the Son of Man, being captured, beaten, and killed. Your actions speak louder than your words. What are they saying? In John chapter 13, Jesus would tell those disciples the night that he was betrayed. He would say, "A new commandment I give you, love one another." Your actions speak louder than your words. And so today I want to challenge us to live and to love. And that's a message that we've heard from the very beginning. If you've grown up, if you've been a part of church, of Christianity, of some sort of organized religion, you hear this being given: love one another. And that gets brought out over and over and over again, how we're supposed to interact with one another. Jesus reminds his disciples to love one another. But then he finishes the sentence. And he says, "As I have loved you, so you are to love one another. Not just as we might perceive love, not just as we might think it to be as we pursue our own ambitions and hopes and goals, but as God's Son has loved us. Take that to heart. Put that into action. Let's measure our thoughts and our reasons and our actions, and let's love as Christ has loved us. Thank you, and God bless.
Lord, take my life. May